Thanks for sticking around. On the line right now is Bridget Welsh. She's the Honorary Research Associate, Asia Research Institute of University of Nottingham, Malaysia. A good friend of our show. Bridget, thanks very much for, again, waiting on the line with us. I know it's been a long day, and it's pretty much going to be a long week for us all. Let's start with your general observations on what has happened today, and, of course, what you think will happen tomorrow.
Well, I think what we've seen is a shifting of the pendulum politically, in the sense that from yesterday it was clearly the advantage lay with UMNO and PAS, and in terms of with the defectors from Pakatan Harapan, Osman Ali, and parts of Persatu. What we've seen this afternoon, and that there is more the chances of Pakatan Harapan, or at least the parties less than Pakatan Harapan, Mana, PKR, most of PKR, not all, and DAP, of potentially coming back into government. And we've also seen in the last day from a prime minister who resigned to now coming back as a new prime minister, although in an interim capacity. And I think these big shifts politically in terms of the numbers game ongoing, as well as Mahathir's position in power, in terms he's got much more power than he had in terms of leverage now than he had yesterday, I think are the two big shifts.
Bridget, I mean, you're a long-time observer of Malaysian politics. I know a lot of people today are talking about the numbers of MPs and how that might pan out. But what about the personalities? Well, who are the central personalities in this? We know it's, apart Dr. Mahathir, we know Osman Ali, we know Anwar Ibrahim. Who do you think who's important in this story?
Well, I think the most important person I think we've seen in the last 3 days has been Algo. He's the most important person who is, I think, in this context, in terms of personalities, he's handled the situation in a phenomenal way in terms of reaching out across parties, engaging, listening to different sides, and setting a sense of prudence in terms of trying to make sure the situation did not escalate and that there is a peaceful transition. I think history will look back at this period and his involvement, I think, very positively. In terms of the political actors, most of these are well known. I think what is interesting has been the importance and rising importance of the kingmakers in all of this process, and that has been the GPS in Sarawak and Warisan and Sabah. And their role is speaking with Mahathir, giving him more numbers and more clout. And, of course, also being the deciding choices in, I think, what will ultimately be the numbers game in the process of setting a parliamentary, I think, are very important. And their, what they're standing for and how they're going about it, I think, are going to be very important focal points. And most people in Malaysia don't look at what's the actions of Sabah and Sarawak, and they are very critical as things will move forward.
Bridget, you know, you mentioned the Agong. I think it was a very surprising answer and a very interesting one. We think of the Agong as governed by the Constitution. I mean, or he's guided, rather, by the Constitution. But what are our politicians guided by? Political culture, a sense of what the populace wants, what the voter will want? Where do you think the mind of our politicians will be when they make their next moves?
Well, I think there are kind of three major considerations. The first has been that there's a significant focus on the positioning of politicians in the power structure. A lot of what has happened here has been driven by political interests of money and greed by actors trying to position themselves to hold on to political power, and history will show that. I think in terms of as they make their choices, they're going to be looking towards their political constituency base. In terms of what they get out of the deals, in particular, how they're representing. I think East Malaysia, GPS, and Warisan are really looking to articulate a position that they can bring back to the voters. And we also see a situation in terms of all of the politicians are going to look to see if things do not move towards forming a new government, how this is going to be perceived by the public. And they're going to try to resonate their framing of the situation for them, because it will be that when things move that way, it will be potentially an election scenario, and this is something that will be in their considerations. Unfortunately, how the public has been thinking about these issues has not been the mind of most of these politicians for quite some time. There's been a real disconnect between the political elites and the public, and this is part of the reasons why we have the problems. If they were genuinely thinking about the public, we would have not seen the actions that we've seen in the last 3 days.
Richard, is there a much more democratic as opposed to less democratic next move? Do you think, as some people suggest, going back to the people, going for an election would be the more democratic choice as opposed to allowing Dr. Mahathir, whoever it is, to cobble together a new government based on the numbers in the assembly?
Well, I think from a purely theoretical position and empirically, going to an election is the most democratic one. I think the system, Malaysia still has very significant problems in the electoral system in terms of gerrymandering and malapportionment. But I think that ultimately, a democratic mandate is the most important for any new government. And I think even if the new government came in through this elite back door, they would have to need to face some sort of legitimation process through the electorate to really to be much stronger. And to do that with an election first or election shortly thereafter is actually will be important for the kind of the vibrancy of the democratic process. If they use the remaining part of the mandate to hold on to power, I think that this will really send a signal that I think will also jeopardize whoever the government is in power, because it will show them as not really listening to the general mandate of the public at large.
Bridget, are you surprised by what's happened over the last 2 days? I mean, was the writing on the wall, was this already a problem kind of, as it were, baked into the Pakatan Harapan when it won in 2018? Could you see this coming? Could anyone have?
Well, I think the infighting and the politicking and the backdoor negotiations have been going on for quite some time. This is the second major attempt that this has happened. The other, there was the dinners and others that happened in November of last year. I think there have been some surprises. The surprises have been Tun Mahathir's response to step down as PM and also to step down as party chairman. I think if he wanted to have a clear signal that he was going to form a new coalition, he would have stayed as party chairman. And so that has been a surprise. I think many people have been surprised that given what's happened and the tensions that existed between Mahathir and Anwar, at least in terms of the perceptions of those tensions, has been the fact that the Pakatan Harapan remaining parties have endorsed Mahathir. So there are some surprises in this process. But I think more generally, the elite politicking and the backdoor dealings have been going on for some time. And I don't think it should come as a surprise that UMNO and PAS want to get into power,
right?
And they're using this particular mechanism in a particular way.
All right, thanks, Bridget. That was Bridget Welsh of the University of Nottingham, Malaysia. Continuing our conversation right now is, of course, Dato' Zaid Ibrahim. He's a chairperson of DAP Kelantan. Now, Dato' Zaid Ibrahim, you've been making calls on a snap election. Let's talk about reality right now. Is it going to happen? What do you think we can do to make it happen?
Well, I think what we have today, clearly, in Parliament, there are many groups all claiming to have support. You know, but on the face of it, no one has a clear majority. In those circumstances, in this sort of situation, the right thing to do is to dissolve Parliament, because you have to go back to the people to give you the mandate. The principle of the mandate is important because the new leader appointed as Prime Minister and the Cabinet must have the backing of the people to do what they want to do.
Can I ask you this? If tomorrow Dr. Mate puts together a new government that looks essentially like the old government, the Pakatan Harapan government, would that be okay?
Well, if he brings up a list of people who has the support of the Pakatan government, that has to be tested in Parliament, of course, whether they have the support of members of Parliament. It's okay, but whether they have the support, that's the issue. And I don't know whether it's easy to do that in the circumstances now.
Yeah,
it's not easy. There is going to be, what's going to happen is going to be a lot of horse trading. There's going to be a lot of, you know, I do this for you, you do this for me. And this is not good for democracy. This is not good for the country.
And we know that this is not good for the country. The question now is, how do we get ourselves out of this quagmire? What do you think the people can do? Is it to demand more from the politicians? What is the realistic steps that we can take?
No, you can ask for a dissolution. That's what you should do. You ask for a dissolution so that the people can vote again. I mean, this is what most countries would do in this circumstances. You know, most countries would do is to dissolve the caretaker prime minister, prepare the country for the next election. That's what you should do.
All right. Thank you, Dato'. That was Dato' Zaid Ibrahim, chairperson of DAP Kelantan.
Faisal, I see you shaking your head, so tell us.
The whole time.
Yeah.
Well, it's probably my neck, but also a little bit of disagreement there. And I say this with all due respect to Dato' Zaid. Now, yes, we talk about going back to the people, but we must not forget, right? Even in instances after a general election, when there is no clear majority, we don't say hold another election. We say, let's see whether we can come up with a coalition. That's what generally happens. And that is what should happen in this instance. That's the first point. The second point is this. Under Article 43, there is no requirement for Yang di-Pertuan Agong to only give the mandate to form the government to someone who has the majority numbers. The requirement under Article 43 is that it's for someone who will likely to command the support of the majority.
Okay, let's put it this way. If Tun or whoever it is comes in with a party that is a minority coalition, right, doesn't have the majority of numbers, and embarks on a radical program of Islamization, for instance, if PAS was in power, or creating tensions within the federation, would that be okay?
Well, I think we are immediately assuming if PAS is... I mean, to be fair, we are immediately assuming if PAS is part of the coalition, it will have a free hand to automatically pursue this path of radicalization. I think, with all due respect, again, that's fear-mongering. We don't know whether they are able to do that. Let's not forget, PAS was in coalition with Pakatan Rakyat for the longest time.
But they didn't have federal power, though.
He was in coalition with DAP at that time. Had Pakatan Rakyat won at that time, PAS would have come to power anyways. I mean, of course, they didn't. But we cannot now demonize them just because they are now in the opposition and Pakatan Rakyat has moved on to become Pakatan Harapan with people who were then demonized when they were in UMNO, for example, Tun. You know, so these are very fluid among the politicians. But the point that I'm making here is this. You do not simply hold an election just because you did not get the result that you wanted in an election. What happens next is that you have to cobble up a coalition. But what happens after that is the question. Well, the way I read Article 43 is that it doesn't necessarily stop the Yang di-Pertuan Agong, if there is no coalition, from requesting or asking someone who he thinks might likely command the support of the majority to form a government. Now, this could be a minority government.
But would that put an inordinate amount of pressure on the institution, seen to be political? The king becomes the kingmaker. Would that be actually detrimental to the neutrality of the institution?
Well, I don't think so. I think in 1974, Harold Wilson in the UK came to power in this manner. And the giving the royalty or the monarch giving power to a minority government is something that is acceptable in democratic practice. Two things will happen then: whether the minority government may go on to garner support from other members of the parliament, or if they lose support further and they think they cannot function, what they will do is then they will then call for or seek for an election. That is what I think the process that we must unfortunately allow to happen, because we have been put in this place by the politicians. It's funny that the politicians put us in this place and then at the same time they say, let's hold an election again.
All right.
That's weird.
This is, on top of many other things weird, this is, of course, the weirdest moment in our path right now. But we have to draw this conversation to a close. Again, this has been a Consider This special. There's going to be more of these kind of shows. We're going to bring you more live updates throughout the day, next week, this week, tomorrow, many other days. If you missed any part of this interview, just head on to astrolling.com. Look for these kind of interviews there. It's been a pleasure. I'm Ibrahim Sani.
And I'm Sharad Kutin.
Until next time.
Thank you.